Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is Amy Hackett-Jones, and this is the 27th episode of the Being Brilliant Radio Show. And you know what the 27th episode is? It's my first year anniversary. So this time a year ago, I was doing my first interview with Carlton Meadows, and wow, what a ride it has been. And 2016 was quite a year. As most of you who follow me will know, and we'll be diving into more of that during the show. Now, today, I have, just to change things around a little bit today for this celebratory show, I am going to be put in the hot seat, and I have three of my past interviewees who are going to be interviewing me. I'm excited to be here. For those of you who don't know, I can hear Michael or Earl laughing in the background there. I'm Amy Hackett-Jones. I'm a happiness and a high-performance coach for being brilliant in the way you both live and lead your life and those around you. You can find me at www.amyhackett.jones.com. And the Being Brilliant Radio Show is a deep and impactful look at what it takes to be brilliant. And the show invites you, our listeners, to step into the very essence of who you are being as you show up to life. So my interviewees are typically high performers, thought leaders, game changers, pioneers, dreamers, adventurers, waysayers, visionaries, as well as friends and family. And Earl, Holly, and Kate are most definitely all of the above. So without much further ado, we are going to step into Kate, who's up first. Kate is the founder of Flourish Therapy in the UK. You can find Kate at www.flourishtherapy.co.uk. And Kate, let's take it away.
Hello, Amy. Thank you so much for inviting me to interview you on your very first anniversary. Wow, that's so exciting.
Thank you. Thank you for being here and agreeing to do this.
Well, I'm giving you my heartiest congratulations and wishing you continued success for the years to come.
Thank you so much.
So listen, I know I'm sharing the interview with Earl Hall and Polly Alexandra. So as I'm going first, I want to make sure I keep to the timing so I don't poach from them both. I know that 2016 was one of those years that threw up some unexpected challenges for you in the form of various multiple losses and seriously touching losses for you individually, personally. You've said that hosting your radio show has helped to provide a settling anchor among the turbulent waters you've been navigating recently. So on your show, you stress the importance of being a human being and not a human doing, which I've got to agree is a philosophy I just think it just totally rocks. So can I dive straight in and ask you, who is Amy as a human being and not as a human doing?
Fantastic question.
Sorry, it might be a bit deep.
I'll try to answer it in a succinct way. You're absolutely right. You know, I put the being, I like to think at least that I put the being back into human being. And we tend to get so stuck in this sort of hamster wheel of doing, because we think that if we do a job or, you know, do our career, then we'll have material wealth so we can buy houses and cars and all the rest of it, so that one day we can be happy. And actually, we have to turn that whole thing around. We have to think, actually, no, I have to choose happiness first so that I can have the things I want to have, so that I can do the things I want to do. So we have to change the whole thing around from do to have to be, from be to being to doing to having. And being a human being rather than a human doing, I tend to think that I'm a spiritual being having a human experience more than anything. And part of that, the human experience, is peeling back onion layers of experience, of each experience in my life, so that I'm constantly learning and growing and evolving, so that I can continue to serve at a higher level. So I hope, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, totally. You know, you mentioned that you choose happiness first, but how, you know, that's, I think for somebody like you to say, it's an easy concept because, you know, this is the field that we work in and we choose happiness first. We have that ability to make that conscious choice to almost direct the lives that we want to live. But for somebody that's listening that may not have that ability, how do you advise people to actually choose happiness first?
Gosh, that's a huge question.
Sorry.
where do I start? Okay, so it really comes from a point of acknowledging first and foremost that you realize that you're not happy, that you recognize that you are perhaps stressed, that you're unhappy, that you're ill at all. You know, if there's any sort of dis-ease, any disease, dis-ease in your body, the body is typically the first thing to show up any signs of dis-ease and therefore of unhappiness. And so first of all, you need to recognize that. And then you can take steps to rectifying it, whether it's rectifying your health, whether it's seeking out a coach or a therapist, or doing stuff that you love more often, whether that's going for a walk in nature, whether that's playing sport or whatever it is. But it's first of all, it's acknowledging, recognizing and acknowledging that you're not happy. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that's out of balance, the stuff that's out of line, and that from that place, you can then become more inquisitive as to looking for what makes you happy and doing more of that first and foremost.
So would you say it's a method of sort of fine-tuning the things that make you tick and the things that don't make you tick? And then by exploring those issues, you can then almost weave a fabric or a framework that then you can use as a, I don't know, a background of positivity. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, exactly. It's beginning to recognize these things that do make you happy or that make you feel lighter about life.
Yeah.
And it could be a myriad of things, whether it's things in the relationship that you're in or in the relationship to yourself. It could be things that you're doing at work. It could be whether it's, you know, your relationship with your kids, this, that, and the other. I mean, it's a whole myriad of different things, and it's taking a handful of those and finding out what it is that makes you happy, taking the handful of those and doing them on a consistent basis. And it is about being on a journey. It is about evolving with the experience. And it's also looking at stuff that happens, as you alluded to at the beginning. You know, 2016 saw me lose my dog, my grandmother, and my mother.
I know.
And it was quite an epic journey in 2016. But it for me, it's been a journey of leaning into the grief and leaning into the feelings, which I was pretty good at, actually, you know, boxing up those feelings and putting them away for a long time before. So it really, whilst I was leaning into the pain and the loss, I was also looking at appreciating every single thing that I have experienced with all three of them, and everything that they've taught me, that I've learned, that I can take forward into my life, so that they do remain alive within me, within every breath I take, every decision I make. I know that my mom, in a sense, is sitting on my shoulder, you know.
Oh, I'm sure she's well sat there, Amy, knowing your mom. I know you mentioned sort of you used to box it up, and having had 2016, I think, and you know, I've gone through very similar experiences myself. I think you get to a stage where you stop resisting the pain, and actually by embracing, not embracing the pain because it hurts, but by learning to walk with what I refer to as the shadow of their death. You know, my various loved lost ones are sat on my left shoulder, and I walk with them, and It makes me feel very happy that they're still a very, very much a part of my physical life. But what, given the sort of the challenges that you've faced recently, what one inner resource have you discovered that you didn't know that you had to help you overcome them?
Inner resource that I didn't know I had. I think the key inner resource for me is inner peace. And if anybody out there has been following me at all, you'll know that this is my core value. And I think I knew I had that resource beforehand, but I didn't know I had it to this extent. You see what I mean? I've really had to grow into it. Rather than just talk about it as a nice spiritual concept, I've really had to lean into inner peace over the last year to enable me to move through the whole grief process in a graceful way, and to breathe life into the experience of being, of, how can I say, the experience of having my mother as my mother and my grandmother as my grandmother and Monty as our pet dog.
Your dog.
You know? they've all, I feel extremely blessed to have had the life I've had on so many levels, including the challenges, which I know we'll dig into more as the interview goes on. And it's really the one resource that I can really hold on to and embrace wholeheartedly now is the sense of inner peace.
I was going to say, sorry, Amy, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but it just seemed, you know, you are known as the peace whisperer. So how do you hold on to inner peace? How do you create that inner peace?
For me, it's about taking it, like, if I take an example that's come up for me just recently, I was confronted with someone at the beginning of the year who, you know, I tend to get on with everybody. I'm very easygoing and relaxed, generally speaking. And this particular person blew everything up in my face. And for a moment, I wasn't quite sure how to react. And when I realized, or not even realized, when I remembered that it isn't so much about reacting, it's about choosing to respond and creating a different outcome. And for a moment in this confrontation, I forgot that, and I reverted back to reacting and feeling small. But when I took a step back, I was actually able to. I remembered. Oh no, this is about, you know, this is about choosing to respond in a different way, to respond from a place of inner peace, choosing to respond from a place of love. You know,
that's very difficult sometimes.
I know it is. And the question I asked myself when I was able to take a step back was, what would love do in this situation? And it's such a brilliant question, because when you ask yourself that, it shifts everything. You know, the anger that I felt and the sort of how could you and who do you think you are kind of thing that was coming up for me. When I stopped and took a step back and thought to myself, what would love do? It changed everything. And in the end, what I had to do was to go back and embrace the situation, breathe into it. Breathing, as I know you know, is a key component of a lot of what I do and teach as well. And that was really how I then rose to the occasion. So I saw that as the universe kind of just putting a pebble in my path. There I am thinking that, you know, I'm at peace about everything. And then suddenly, oh, no, not quite. There's a little something extra to iron out there.
Oh my goodness. Do you know what? I wish I had the whole hour with you, because I want to delve into that so deeply, but I can't. Oh, it's so frustrating. I know I had some other things that I might have asked you, but can I just ask you, given that situation that you found yourself in and you were able to step back and ask, what would love do? How does that align with then your sense of values and integrity? It's a complicated question. Does that mean that, you know, if, for instance, you were rejecting something or that individual that had certain aspects of their character that you completely didn't accept for whatever reason, because they were so in opposition to what your values are. How do then would you incorporate that with love? I can understand it to a degree, but yeah. What's your take on it?
What I've since learned, again, because I'm always learning to set boundaries, is that it's about setting boundaries of what you are willing to accept and what you're not willing to accept.
Yeah.
And this particular person overstepped a lot of my boundaries in that moment. And it's because I realized afterwards that I had let those drop. And what he was showing up, what was showing to me, was quite simply that I had... It was like he was pressing a button or itching a scab that I hadn't quite healed.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm able to do now, and this was actually after a conversation I had in London with Earl as well, was what I've been able to do since that is to look at that and actually start approaching him from a place of love. And in my own heart. Now, the next step for me is to actually have a conversation with him coming from love, which I haven't done yet. That's on my list. And will take a lot of courage. And I fully recognize that. But that's the process that it's taken me through, is recognizing where I let my boundaries down and how to reset them and how to look at the anger that I had inside, because it wasn't – it's just something that I was holding inside of me and hadn't resolved yet. It wasn't really anything to do with him. He was just showing me that anger, you know, by picking at the scab, so to speak.
Great answer. I think we should all go and re-listen to that one. Now, I know I've literally got about 1 minute left. So, Amy, just in a very succinct way, what does being brilliant mean to you?
Being brilliant for me is... it's really about showing up to life in the best way you know how to in that moment.
Mm.
And for me this year, you know, had you asked me this 3 years ago, it would have been me, the high-performing, highly athletic, executive coach, coaching executives in Panama and presidents and all sorts of things. And yet now, if you were to ask me what is being brilliant for you today, Amy, being brilliant for me today is being with grief. It's shining my own light no matter how fierce the storm, and living through that and learning from every single experience along the way. And if I were to sum it up in sort of almost three words, it would be listen openly, love wholeheartedly, and laugh with reckless abandon.
Do you know what, if we all employed that regularly, the world would be a much happier place. Amy, thank you so much. I don't want to delay because I know you've got Polly who's going to come in and interview now. So I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the rest of the interview. But thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, thank you so much, Kate, for your questions. I've thoroughly enjoyed being interviewed so far. And next up, we have Polly Alexander. Polly. Welcome.
Hi, Amy. So great to be here. I just want to start off by saying a huge congratulations on your first anniversary show. I think it's been amazing. I'm so impressed by the consistency and the way that you have continued to do the shows every month, every couple of weeks, in what's been such a powerful and big year for you. I know that consistency is a huge piece for entrepreneurs. We can burn brightly and then with a new idea and then it fades away. So I just really want to honor your consistency, the way you've showed up and all of the amazing shows you've produced. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been quite a journey. Certainly has. So
great. So yeah, I'm really excited to be able to ask you some questions. I really enjoyed our interview a few months ago. So are you okay if I dive straight in?
Yeah, let's just dive right in.
Awesome. So, you know, you've really experienced a number of intense events and losses in your life, you know, particularly over the last year. And so I'm really curious is, you know, how do you view the purpose of these events for example, your accident, how do you frame them in your mind so they don't completely take you out?
Yeah, that's really interesting because, like you say, I had quite a lot going on over the last year. And my accident, this was a skiing accident I had back in 1999, and in which I managed to fracture and crush my lumbar vertebrae and break my right hip in three places. So it was pretty epic.
Wow.
And sometimes I wonder if it's sort of divine intervention course correcting me, you know, whether it's something written in the stars or what really. But at the time, I was actually pretty hell-bent on becoming an MI6 agent, believe it or not.
Wow. That's something I didn't know about you.
Well, yeah, full of surprises.
I can't wait to read your book one day.
I know. I've already got the title for it. I just haven't quite written it yet. But so, you know, that accident took it all out of me in that moment, you know, in time. I was 21, or turning 21, should I say. And as I said, I was hell-bent on becoming an MI6 agent. That was my entire focus of my life that far, really, had sort of been driving towards that. It was just, I felt like it was my calling. I felt that that was just what I wanted to be. And this accident, because I had had a spinal injury, the Minister of Defence basically turned around and said, no, we're not taking you. And the doctors turned around and said, you'll never run again. And at that point, I was marathon fit. I was going to do the London Marathon 2 weeks later. So for someone who was so hell-bent on one particular career and who was so athletic their entire lives, I sank into a deep hole at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. And I remember lying there in bed afterwards, after I'd been sort of helicoptered off a slope and flown home on a stretcher and an ambulance ride from Heathrow all the way back home, and then in bed for about 6 months. And I got to a point fairly soon when I was lying in bed and sort of in my point of woe is me and I'll never run again. And part of me desperately wanted to prove the doctors wrong. And I later did. I later ended up doing some triathlons. But really what got me in that, in I guess really to accept the whole process, was I had all these grand plans at the beginning. I thought, right, well, I'm going to lie, you know, I can't move, so I'm going to lie here and learn Russian. but I was on such you know,
why
big
Russian?
Kidders. Sorry?
Why Russian?
That's all a spy speak, isn't it?
Oh, got it. So we're still in spy.
I was still hoping. I know you spoke French and Spanish, so I thought, well, you know, I need something different now. And I got to a point where I thought, right, I'm going to learn Russian. I'm going to do something constructive with my time, you know. And I found that I kept reading the same page over and over and over again. And I realized that I wasn't taking anything in. I couldn't concentrate. Obviously, the drugs, the painkillers I was taking were that intense that I just couldn't concentrate. So at the beginning there, I felt like I was giving up. And then I realized that actually, no, I'm not giving up. What I have to do is lean into the situation I'm in. I have to be with what is and not fight it. And when I started leaning into what was, I started to find a whole lot more freedom, and I started to dream again. I started to think about what other things I could do with my life. I started to think about why on earth it had happened in the first place, and was it even an accident, or was it divine intervention? Was it, mm-hmm. you know? And I started asking lots of questions, and that was when I really started reaching out for other sources of inspiration, other things to do with my life, because I hadn't gone down the sort of corporate career thing at university, and because what I wanted to do was be a spy. So I'd sort of felt like I'd missed all the milk rounds. I'd missed all of, you know, all of the stuff that everybody else was doing. And so I started asking a lot more questions, and that's really when my deep dive started to happen. And I ended up, fast forwarding a year or two, I ended up in a job that paid me to travel the world, interview heads of state. And people thought I was a spy anyway. It sort of ended up coming full circle. But no, I mean, I had a wonderful time doing that job. It was absolutely brilliant. And on one of the trips that I was on, I was in deepest, darkest Africa in Botswana. And I was still soul searching a lot of the time. And I walked into a hotel and lo and behold, in my hotel room, somebody had left behind a book on the bedside table. And the book just happened to be The Secret.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it was all, you know, it had just come out. I'd never heard of it before, but it had just come out and I read it, gobbled it up. I bought the sort of live stream, the downloadable video of it online and everything, watched it, soaked it all up, started putting it into practice, started doing, you know, meditating properly and everything. And it was like that book was a window into the rest of my life. It was like just opened a window into possibility of what could be and of other ideas and dreams and this, that and the other. And, you know, that's where it all started from.
Wow. Wow. So it's like your accident sounds like almost like some kind of awakening for you.
Yeah, it definitely was. Definitely. I mean, goodness knows where I'd be right now if I had actually become a spy. I might not even be here.
Highly probable.
Yeah.
I've recently come across the concept divine timing moments, and apparently we have timing moments in our life when intense events can happen that will realign us on our path or result in something that happens for the greater good of humanity.
Yeah.
And so this really feels like you were being pulled out of the trajectory you're on and put on a completely different one because actually you have a greater purpose in the world that's going to have more of an impact than being a spy.
Absolutely. And you've hit it spot on. I mean, it definitely was one of those wake up moments. And what, you know, what's led to that ever since, it's been a continuous journey of learning and growing, as I know you well know as well. And just opening up to possibility, and like you say, the impact I want to have in the world is far bigger than I could have had as a spy. So, so I sort of laugh at it now, and I'm able to, because I was able to lean with what was so, and stop fighting it. That then enabled me to open up all these other doors of opportunity. So
yeah. Yeah, I really hear that, the surrender and the letting go that you were able to adopt in that situation.
Yeah,
absolutely. So what advice would you give anyone who feels they're at rock bottom or feels things are falling apart for them right now?
I think the first thing I would say is don't suffer in silence. Reach out. Whether that's to a friend, whether that's to a loved one, whether that's to somebody outside of your circle, whether it's a coach or a therapist or a healer or whatever that may be for you, but don't suffer in silence. And I'd also say for that is to start asking yourself some questions. I mean, I mentioned earlier, you know, what would love do? That's a great question. Another one I love, by the way, is I use with my clients quite a lot when they hit a stuck point is, well, the answer is love. So now what's your question?
It's so simple, but so powerful.
It's so powerful, like you said. It just turns everything around. And keeps it simple, because when we're in ego and we complicate things and we're stressed and all this, it's just your spirit is so simple. The answer is so simple. We just mash it all up in our brains and make it complicated. But yeah, I would say don't suffer in silence. And if you feel like you don't want to reach out, if you feel like you have no one to reach out to, ask yourself a couple of really powerful questions like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful, great. I love how you have this wonderful ability to take wisdom and simplify it.
Yeah, thank you.
Beautiful. So on that note, if you could teach us all one tool today to improve our sense of peace in our daily lives, because I know that's a subject you're passionate about, what would that tool be?
I think one of my go-to tools, well, actually, I'm going to backtrack a little bit before that. The first thing and the simplest thing would be to breathe. And I know Kate knows a lot about this, as does Earl, who's up next. Because when we get into the fight and flight mechanism of things, the first thing to go is our breath. Like we freeze. And what happens is all of our blood drains from our brains into our muscles so that they're pumped, ready to take flight or to fight. And so we physiologically lose the capacity to think because the oxygen has been and the blood has been drained from our system. So the first thing to do is to remember to breathe, to reoxygenate your brain, and then you have more opportunity to choose a different outcome. The first thing would be to breathe. And then the second thing would be a practice that I absolutely love. And it's called Ho'oponopono, and it's an ancient Hawaiian tradition, really of forgiveness, but also of healing. And basically it comprises of four very, very simple phrases, and anyone could say them at any point in time, whether you say them under your breath to yourself or whether you're saying them to another person. The idea first is that you say them to yourself. So you keep it all to yourself and you start opening your heart through using these four phrases, which I'm about to give you. And then once you've built up the muscle a little bit, you are practicing it for yourself and opening your heart, then you can take it into a relationship, into an argument you've had or an issue or something with somebody. And it's an absolute game changer. So these four little phrases are, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Now, when you're saying this to yourself about an issue that you're stressed about, or perhaps you're overweight, or perhaps you smoke too much, or drink too much, or eat too much sugar, whatever it is, you say, I'm sorry to yourself. I'm sorry for eating too much. I'm sorry for my smoking addiction. I'm sorry for this, that, and the other, whatever it is. Please forgive me. It's like you're asking your little child, your inner child, or you're asking the universe, please forgive me. And then you say, thank you. And then you say, I love you. And it's an absolute game changer. And when you have the courage to do that with someone else, and you sit opposite them and you look them deeply in the eyes, you open your heart, you hold their hands and you say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. It's just incredible.
Beautiful, really powerful.
It is really powerful. And even I've even used it a couple of times when I've been in a meeting and somebody has said something which I don't like or it's ruffled me in some sort of way. So literally I just go straight to, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. And it calms me down immediately. They don't know I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at them and saying that, in my own mind. And it shifts the energy in the room. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. So that would be my number one little takeaway. Very simple exercise. And anyone can do it at any time. So there we go.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
My pleasure.
Do I have time for another question or are we going to some music now?
I think we've got time for one more quick question and then we'll go to the song. So fire away.
Great. I think bearing in mind the last year and the losses you've experienced, I would love to know a little about what grief has taught you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, it was with Earl a month or so ago. We met up in London, and he said something about, you know, how I've been grieving. And he said, there's a word that came to me. And he said, gracefully. And I said, oh, that's nice, grieving gracefully. And he said, yeah, it's got a certain ringtone to it, hasn't it? And I said, yes, it does. So I've gone and bought the domain name and the hashtag. I've been using that. And it was just when he said that, I just sort of thought, gosh, what has grief taught me? If he's perceived or picked up on that I've been grieving gracefully, because I have been sharing it online. I have been sharing my journey in a way that I feel, or at least I hope that other people going through the same journey can feel into and can get some insight from what I've been sharing. And I think the key thing that it's really taught me is to be gentle with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And which, for someone who's always been sort of like a high performer and a go-getter and all that sort of thing in my previous life before coming home to take care of my mother, being gentle with myself was something that I had never really done before. And what it's allowed me to do as well is to allow allow the feelings and the emotions to come up, rather than to block them, because I was very good at that at one point in my life. Feelings, who wants those? Find them up, put them in a box at the back of a wardrobe somewhere.
Nothing but so trouble. Get rid of them. Ignore them.
Exactly. So it's allowed me to feel, and it's allowed me to talk about the rawness of those feelings. Getting real with them, getting real and raw with those feelings, because it's nothing to be ashamed of, and it's actually something, it's a beautiful part of life, is grief. And you just, in sharing, I was really doing nothing more than reaching out really to other people who are going through a journey, because you just never know who's listening and whose life you might touch. And as you know, I mean, my nickname is the Peace Whisperer. So really my intention is to help create peace in amongst the chaos that can be left behind by some form of grief, whether it's somebody passing, whether it's having to move on from a divorce or whatever it is. So my intention really is about creating peace. And as I've mentioned with Kate as well, is I've really had to lean into peace in this whole process and expand my experience of that so that I can share it in a greater way.
Thank you.
Does that
so
answer
much,
your question?
So it absolutely does. I think it's such an unexplored subject.
Yes.
You know, discussed so rarely. So that was really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I really admire your grief, your graceful grieving. I think that's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And I also know, I also feel that, or have come to believe that both my mother and my grandmother and my dog, who all passed away this year, or 2016, I really believe that, you know, the experience of living with this life with them, all the memories I have, all the teachings they've given me, which were incredible and still are, you know, they still live on in me, in every breath I take, because their influence on me was so strong. And I, you know, I know my mum sitting on my right shoulder. I know that, you know, I see a white feather in a random place, or seemingly random place, and I know it's the universe. I know it's mum just give me a nudge and a wink wink. It's like, all right, that's cool. She's still out there, she's still taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that may sound a bit woo woo to some people, but you know, it's I find it comforting more than anything.
Yeah. Although we may be physically separated, our souls are not separate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that memory and that presence and that connection goes on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Polly. I think you have one more question for me, but I think what we'll do is we'll go to the song now and we'll come to that question afterwards, because it's a great question. We were talking about it just before the show and I have a brilliant answer for it. So we'll go to the song now. This is Exactly by Amy Steinberg, one of my all-time favorites. And we'll be back with Polly and then Earl after the show, after the song, should I say.
I am exactly where I need to be. I need to be exactly where I am. I am a blessing manifest.
Love that song. That's exactly by Amy Steinberg, and you can pop on over to iTunes and download it. Now, the reason why I chose that song is, if you really just, by the way, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. just checking.
All good.
The reason why I chose that song is because it really is, for me, one of the most spiritual songs out there. If you really listen to the lyrics, and I urge everyone to go back and listen to the lyrics, it really does take you back to the beginning of time and have you got to be here right now. And it's just so beautiful. And I just love when she talks about, when I think I know what's best for me, fate, she takes me back to exactly where I'm meant to be. So it's sort of like when we get caught up in our heads thinking about, worrying about this and worrying about that and thinking that we ought to be doing a certain thing. Actually, when we then take that step, when we drop back into our hearts and connect from there, this is what I was mentioning earlier, that's where truth lies. That's where miracles happen. And when we're in our heads, this is where we operate a lot of the time from fear. And she also then talks about when she recognizes that she's in fear, she's reminded that the rising sun always appears. And it's just like a reality check to get back to, wow, you know, this is what's real. The rising sun always appears. My fear is just an illusion. So anyway, that's just part of the reason why I love that song. And then she talks about miracles happening every day and how she's exactly where she needs to be. So that's why I love that song, because we're all exactly where we need to be. So, Polly, your next question, please.
Oh, welcome back, Amy. You are brighter and clearer and more powerful than ever. I feel like we're getting the full force of Amy now. So awesome, yes. Awesome. I'm glad to have you back brighter than ever. So, yeah. The question that I would like to ask you is, if you were to pick one word as a theme for this year, for your 2017, what would it be and why?
Right. And for that, I have a brilliant answer. And if I have quite a strong word, so if you've got sensitive ears, cover them up. And the word I've chosen for this year is unfuckwithable.
Huh?
What do I mean by that? Well, the definition of unfuckwithable, as I came across on Facebook, is when you're truly at peace and in touch with yourself, and nothing anyone says or does bothers you, and no negativity or drama can touch you. I'm going to say that again. When you're truly at peace and in touch with yourself, and nothing anyone says or does bothers you, and no negativity or drama can touch you. That's a pretty awesome place to be and to operate from.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did my TEDx talk a couple of years ago, I was talking about inner peace, and at that time I was confronted with my brother, who had cancer at the time. He's since been given the all clear, and my mother as well, who had cancer and who later died last year. And what the question I was looking at was, how can I be of service to them in their time of need? And I recognized that if I was stressed and worried and all sort of pent up and upset in their presence, then I wasn't actually being of service. I needed to be a lighthouse, and I needed to shine my own light no matter how fierce the storm. And that's really where I align with this word unfuckwithable, where I align with Peace Whisperer, where I align with my sort of vision for world peace, which begins with you and me, and it begins with each one of us choosing to be unfuckwithable. And so that's what I'm leaning into for 2017.
And it sounds like quite a tall order. It sounds kind of akin to enlightenment, but yes. I love your ambition. Never want to aim low.
Yeah, absolutely.
And give me one place you're going to start with this before we close.
One place, well, I feel like I've already started, and that's in relationship to this person I was talking to Kate about, who brought up some challenges for me at the beginning of this year, which I hadn't really ever confronted before. And where I'll be taking it as I move forward is in rebuilding my business. And I'll be moving to London in about a month's time with literally just my suitcase and a laptop. And starting all over again. So starting from zero and, you know, not too far off 40, starting all over again, it feels both scary and incredibly exciting at the same time. And so taking that word with me on my journey and breathing life into it is really what my business is going to be about. You know, my number one sort of motivation is freedom. And for me, what freedom is this deep sense of inner peace where no negativity or drama can touch me. And that's what I want to take out into the world as the Peace Whisperer.
Amazing, amazing. I'm really excited that this is the year that you get to go out and you get to shine your light in the world. I know that you've got so much to offer.
Thank you.
And I'm just really excited to see how it all unfolds for you and to see you grow and shine.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for accompanying me on the journey.
You are so welcome. What a journey it is.
I know. Thank you so much, Polly. It's been a huge pleasure. And now I'm going to welcome Earl. Hello, Earl.
Hi.
Well, Amy, welcome to the Being Brilliant radio show, and I have my 15 minutes of fame being the temporary host. How are you this afternoon or this evening?
I'm very good. I'm being with all the tech issues and everything else.
They were just trying to test if you actually live what you say. So you did a really good job, if you want my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I have 417 questions for you. Would you like to start right away?
Sure. Let's hit at them.
No, seriously, though, the first thing I think I'm going to say for all of the listeners out there all over the world that unfortunately are not going to get the chance to say this live to you, first of all, congratulations for your commitment. A lot of people have started shows over the last number of years, and they never keep their commitment over time. So I think the respect and the loyalty that you have shown to your audience is absolutely outstanding. So thank you on behalf of them.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's the first and probably the most important thing I wanted to say. I have a question, if you don't mind.
Sure. Is that number one or number 417?
I'm up to about 12 because I'm skipping through the ones that I'm too nervous to ask. So as you know me as being a very nervous person, right? I'd like to know, because you've touched so many people, so many lives, so many hearts over the last year, there has to be one major life lesson that you've taken away besides the un-F word, that after coming off of a radio show, feeling the emotion, feeling the rawness of what you oblige people to deliver on these radio shows, tell us about one experience that really moved you.
Gosh, I mean, there are so many, because I just love people's stories of triumph and tribulation and all sorts. But I think one that particularly impacted me was Katie Phillips, who I know Polly also knows. And her story was one of her mother committed suicide when she was, I think it was in her early 20s or thereabouts. And Katie later, you know, she became a high performing career girl and all the rest of that that goes with it. And she became highly stressed, et cetera, as well. And she woke up one morning in a deep depression and realized that she was actually on the same trajectory to where her mother had gone. And that she woke up one morning and made that decision there and then that she wasn't going to go along the same path, that she was going to turn her life around. And that she did, and that she has. And she's just such a beautiful blossoming example of what self-love is, and that's what she teaches. And you know, she works particularly with women and teaches them self-love. And in a sense, I call it inner peace. She calls it self-love. It's a similar sort of thing. But it was when she described that moment of turning, deciding, making that decision, and taking inspired action, acting on it and following it through and having the commitment and the consistency to follow through. That was really one of the moments that most impacted me, was hearing that story.
And would you mind telling us why it impacted you that much?
I think it was because in that moment, she made that decision and she stuck to it. And I think for me, it was that stickability. Like I had realized in my life that I had stuck with and been very motivated in terms of working for other people. And yet when it came to working for myself, I didn't have that sense of duty to myself as I did to other people. And so through doing the radio show, I've built that muscle.
And, wow. I'm so happy you just brought that to the forefront, because you're actually showing us that you actually practice what you preach, because this radio show is about being brilliant. I get that, but it's about choosing you as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Tell me about year two that's coming up in front of us. Who are you now that you're rich and famous and you're this big international radio star hailing out of the UK? Who are you manifesting as your star dream guest for year two? Do you have anybody in mind?
Well, on my in front of my computer here, I have what I call a board of advisors. And literally, I have a big piece of paper. It's a bit like a vision board, but I have a big piece of paper up in front of me with people whom I admire and who I will sometimes sit and ask questions to as I look at their pictures. I've cut them out and stuck them on the board. And there are three who I'd like to interview this year particularly. One is Marianne Williamson, who anybody in this online
outstanding choice
would be. Yeah, she's just so utterly brilliant. And such a great example. Jason Silva is another one. Have you heard of Jason?
Yes, I have. And that's another great choice.
Yeah.
You should just simply reach out and say, hey, Jason, you're on this show on this date.
Well, and I have one more. I'm going to show him in just a moment. And it's funny you said that, Earl, because I hadn't met you. You were episode number 3. I hadn't met you before. I'd been following you for a little while. Somehow or other, I came across you on Facebook. And you have, I don't know how many thousands of followers on Facebook. I have not nearly as many. And I just, the small part of me sort of thought, you know, who are you to reach out to Earl to see if he'll be on your show? And then the bigger part of me thought, just do it anyway. What have you got to lose? My mother always used to say, nothing
better. Is this where we insert the blush officially? Because it's really warm here. considering it's cold in Canada, but hey, I'll take it.
And you know what? I reached out and you literally within about 5 minutes, you responded and said you'd be honored. And I was in complete shock. So thank you for reinforcing the belief in me, my belief in me, should I say. Because that moment really showed me that I could reach out to anyone.
Well, see, the thing is that the name of your radio show is awe-inspiring because for me, being brilliant is all about being inside of your purpose. And to be in your purpose, you have to be in your heart. And from everything that I was reading, you were spot on. So how could I say no in the 3 minutes that I read about you before going, oh, wow, this is cool.
Oh, thank you.
Has the show this year lived up to the expectations that you set for yourself a year ago?
Before I answer that question, I just want to say the third one I have on my hit list this year is Desmond Tutu.
Okay. Now make sure we're all available for that episode, please. Why do you, let's scratch my question and dig in here. Why him?
Because why not? And because Nelson Mandela is no longer here.
No.
And because he's all about world peace. And because he just has the most awesome laugh. It's just so cheeky and just so brilliant and just so heartfelt. I just want to connect it with him. I just feel that he has so much to offer. Yeah.
What's the one question that, if you've already chosen him, you have one question you want to ask him? What is it?
Oh, my goodness.
You know the question.
Well, it would be two. One would be, what does he do to reach inner peace, to create inner peace? And two, how can I help to manifest that in the world?
Oh, boys, that's pretty deep. Marianne is great, but I tell you, Desmond Tutu, now you're hitting for the big leagues.
Right.
So what month are you going to manifest them on?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I think coming up for Christmas would be a pretty good time for Desmond Tutu.
There we go. It's time to start scrapbooking Desmond for Christmas. Okay.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, unfortunately for me, as the temporary host of Being Brilliant, my time is up. So I think I'm going to hand back the reins to you. And I think you need to talk with Michael and the others. And I'm going to stand by in case you need me again.
Okay, fantastic. And then I will answer that last question of yours. All right, Michael, are you there? Hello, Michael. Okay, he may not be there. So, Earl, could you repeat your question again?
Well, the question that I had was, considering you've
all
been...
All right, here I am, guys. I was on mute in two places. So.
Sorry.
Nobody wants me to ask this question, so I'm officially deleting it from the screen.
Okay. Well, great job, Earl and Polly. Fantastic. Sorry about the tech issues we had a little bit earlier in part of Polly's thing. And Kate, as always, a brilliant job as well. And we're going to go a little bit long here, but I just wanted to say a few words before I turn it back over to Amy to wrap it all up on her first anniversary show here. Amy, congratulations and cheers. You've done a brilliant job. Where did I get that word, brilliant? Geez, I don't know. That you have done a brilliant job over the course of the year. It didn't matter where you were in the world, you did your show consistently. And Earl brought this up, and it is so important to do that. And you delivered just awesome content with awesome guests. And I'm very proud, honored to be your friend and to work with you. It has been absolutely a terrific addition to the Coach on Fire Radio Network. You've been with us since almost the beginning, and I appreciate your support and just doing such a brilliant show. So congratulations, Amy. Looking forward to the second year and having more awesome guests and more awesome content. I know it's been a really, really tough year for you, but the one thing you did consistently was the radio show, and I really, really appreciate that. So congratulations, Amy, and thank you, Kate. Thank you, Earl. Thank you, Polly. It's been absolutely wonderful and a real joy to work with Amy over the course of the year, and I know you all know her well, and you'll concur in that sentiment.
Congrats,
thank you so
Amy.
Much, thank you. So thank you all to my wonderful guests, Earl Hall, a scientist of happiness, Polly Alexander, success coach for creative entrepreneurs, and Kate Hartley, founder of Flourish Therapy here in the UK. Thank you all so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here and to breeze through the tech issues that we've had. I will be on again in 2 weeks. Time. So thank you all so much. This is Amy Hackett-Jones. You can find me at
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Radio. Calling the beautifully redesigned 2017 Mercedes-Benz CLA simply a four-door coupe is like describing a world-class athlete as just a good runner. With its sleek profile and powerful turbocharged engine, the CLA offers agility and design that are unmatched in its class, and it's available now at an exceptional price. Why drive any four-door coupe when you could be driving the 2017 Mercedes-Benz CLA? Visit mbusa.com/CLA to learn more. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.